This is Rural Health Leadership Radio.
Episode 44, a conversation with Dr. Elisha Yagmai, president of Free State Healthcare.
You go to a town like Seattle, there are thousands of physicians there. And, you know, if one physician goes away, there's 30 more that will pop up, you know, that will do a great job. But you go out to a small town and one physician goes away and that's it, the end. There's no more health care.
Welcome to the Rural Health Leadership Radio with your host, Dr. Bill Oxier. Each week, Dr. Oxier has a conversation with a different rural health leader to discuss what's working and what's not working in rural health, along with other topics of interest to rural health leaders. Rural Health Leadership Radio's goal is to improve health in rural America by providing a simple, no-cost means to share information and connect rural health leaders from around the country. And now, here's Dr. Oxier with today's guest.
Hi, everybody. I am your host, Dr. Bill Oxier, and welcome to Rural Health Leadership Radio. I would like to thank Dr. Elisha Yagmai and Free State Healthcare for their generous donation to underwrite the cost of the production of this week's episode of Rural Health Leadership Radio. I'm appreciative of today's guest taking time out of his busy schedule to have a conversation with us today, because today's guest is Dr. Elisha Yagmai. He is the president of Free State Healthcare, formerly known as the Vigilius Telehealth. Born in California, Elisha has lived in every major region of the United States and logged time in Africa and Asia. He went into medicine to change the world, but found that medicine changed him instead. His company is his way of fighting back by providing telehealth to the underserved. Elisha is a double boarded in internal medicine and pediatrics and has worked in both rural Kansas and multi-hospital tertiary referral centers. He has experience as an adult and pediatric hospitalist, an urgent care physician, emergency medical doctor, and rural primary care provider, all part of his informal master plan to learn as much as possible about as much as possible for the better. He believes in telemedicine, that it has the power to fundamentally change healthcare delivery. He completed his undergraduate work at Harvard University, earned his Master's of Public Health and Tropical Medicine at Tulane University School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine, and went to medical school at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School of Dallas. Dr. Yagmai, welcome to Rural Health Leadership Radio.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm honored to have you as a guest today, and a well-traveled man, a well-educated man, and serving the underserved of rural health through telemedicine is a great achievement through your organization. So thank you for making time to visit with us here on Rural Health Leadership Radio today. The first question I want to ask you, I ask every guest, because part of the name of this program is leadership. What's your definition of leadership?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this one a little bit. I think my definition is identifying things that that you believe need to be changed to improve society, whether that be local society or something on a broader scale, and then, you know, helping to mobilize and bring together other people that share that same desire. And trying to get everyone in a position and with the appropriate tools to be able to effect the kinds of positive changes that you want to see. So my perspective on it is maybe the taking the role of, you know, trying to establish a vision and trying to impart that to others, but in many cases serving in the role as more of a facilitator, an organizer, and somebody trying to get a bunch of disparate parts together to produce an outcome that is greater than the sum of its individual parts.
Excellent. I really appreciate the aspect of impacting society in your definition. Thank you for sharing that. So why did you choose a career path of being a physician?
You know, my initial impetus actually was that I wanted to go save the world. I mean, that, you know, as cliche as that sounds, I wanted to go into international medicine and go, you know, work off in the jungle somewhere and try to open a clinic and, you know, do something, you know, Albert Schweitzer like, or, you know, something along those lines of trying to gain a skill set to be able to bring something to communities that didn't have any medical care.
Very admirable. And it sounds like you can, with all the training you have. I mean, you've worked as an urgent care physician, an emergency medicine doctor, primary health, et cetera. So I'm glad to always talk to someone that sets the bar high in their goals. So you've obviously changed your focus to a little bit, particularly on rural health. Why rural health?
You know, it came about because I happened to do my residency training in Kansas. So, you know, prior to that, I'd lived almost entirely in large cities. And so I didn't have a lot of thought about rural health or, you know, those kinds of things. Like a lot of people, I think that live in an urban environment. But, you know, being a resident in Kansas, you see people that get transferred in from various small hospitals. And you know, there's a lot of dynamics that go on around that, and why are people transferred, and what are they transferred for, and what do you do for them after the fact? But I think it sensitized me to the fact that we have these communities that, in many cases, were not able to marshal the resources that were just taken for granted in cities. And then after I finished my residency, actually, I went out to a hospital in rural Kansas, and I worked there for a while before we ended up moving to Seattle, Washington, where my wife was doing fellowship training. So, I had the experience of sort of working out there as a single hospitalist in this hospital, and the challenges that were there when, you know, there were resources that you kind of would always have in a city. It was just not even a question, right? And right. You couldn't access those resources there, but you're trying to provide care for people. And then, you know, you take it a step further, then there'd be times where you would, you know, you'd very clearly need, for example, to send the patient on because there was some tool that you just don't have that you have to have. And the process and the pain of, you know, trying to call three or four places and beg people, you know, take my patient. I promise you, you know, I know what I'm talking about. Please take my patient. I cannot care for them here. I do not have the tools, and being, you know, given a runaround and stalled and delayed and, you know, sitting there for 2-3 hours. And the whole time sitting there saying, you know, if this poor patient was in a city, this would have been done. This wouldn't have even been a question. Right. This would have already been over. You know, so you kind of combining that. And then, you know, I had friends that went out to work in even smaller towns. They went out to work as primary care physicians, and talking to them about their experience. You know, all those things kind of woke me up to the state of rural health, what was going on. And then also, you know, began to suggest ideas for, you know, what are some things that we could do to try to improve that situation?
Excellent. You know, I think you may have already at least started to answer my next question, and that is why the focus on telemedicine?
Yeah, telemedicine for me came about because I was actually working in a big tertiary center. And, you know, at some point I just, on a personal level, I felt, you know, I'm lost in this sort of monstrous entity. And I don't feel that what I'm personally doing is making that much of an impact on a day-to-day basis. I didn't get into medicine to just kind of be, a cog kind of, you know, punching a time card and following a procedure, but really not much was happening as a result of all that effort.
You can't save the world. The world if you're only a cog.
You can't. And I think what kind of bang do you get for your buck, right? I mean, you know, you go to a town like Seattle, right? There are thousands of physicians there, and you know, if one physician goes away, there's 30 more that will pop up there. You know, that will do a great job. But you go out to a small town, and one physician goes away, and that's it. The end. There's no more healthcare. You know, it's just a totally different environment. So the reason we got to telemedicine actually is because one of the things I'd realized about rural health was, one of the big problems is travel. So when people want to go out, you know, they don't necessarily want to travel out there. And then you have problems with recruitment because, you know, maybe you can recruit in the doc, but then their spouse isn't that happy, or the doc is out there and they're getting called, 24 hours a day for years on end. And there's just, you know, a lot of people end up getting burned out, or they end up leaving. And I had friends that were leaving. And so the basic thought was, okay, wait a minute. We've got all these little towns, right, that are scattered all over the place. Well, let's say I go pick one of them and say, okay, I want to go work there. Well, that's nice, right? But what about the other 79 towns, right? What are they going to do for healthcare? This will make me feel better about what I'm doing, but will it really solve the broader problem of access to care? And so I thought telemedicine was the way that we could kind of put these two needs together. We have docs that want to help, but there's only one of them. Well, how do we take the one doc and multiply their force to make them available to 20 communities simultaneously? How do we do that? And telemedicine seemed to be the answer to that question.
Well, you've created the organization Free State Healthcare. Can you tell us the history about your organization and just give us an overview of it, why, how you came into being, that sort of thing?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, the initial impetus behind this was myself and actually one other doc that I had asked to jump in with us. We were initially just trying to go out to small towns and say, hey, you know, those towns, let's say you've got one provider and your provider, you know, as I mentioned before, your provider's on call all the time. They're getting tired. Why don't we, rather than you paying a locum tenens company, for example, you know, paying them thousands of dollars to send somebody out to, you know, maybe sleep in your hospital and do nothing, right? Why don't instead we use telemedicine so that we can supply you with a good doc on a regular, predictable, reliable basis to relieve your doc. So, for example, we'll come into your town, we'll cover you at night and on the weekends and on the holidays. We'll do all that via telemedicine. You'll see the same doc or, you know, doc or two every single time so that you develop continuity and trust and they get to know you and you get to know them or all those kind of benefits. And we'll do all that. And you know, hey, each one of these towns, you know, your overall patient volumes are not high, right? So I could probably cover you and I could probably cover 5, 6, 7 other places. And so, you know, the idea was, hey, I can cover you for a fraction of what you're paying right now, but still be able to pay the physician a competitive rate to be able to attract good people. So, you know, the community can win by paying, you know, 1/10 of what they're currently paying now. The physician wins by being able to help people in a rural community and still make a competitive wage to do that. And the patients win by getting consistent coverage from people, you know, a broader recruiting pool, because you're not asking them to fly for 4 hours and then drive for 2 more to get to a place, you know, so kind of all those potential benefits would come together. So that's how it started. And then we ran into federal regulation. CMS has a regulation that makes it, that limits who can cover an emergency room and in what capacity. Specifically, they don't allow telemedicine physicians to be the attending physician or the admitting physician. So then the problem was, let's say you're a small hospital X and you've got, let's say you have a physician assistant or something, right, that covers your ER, rather than being able to tell that person, hey, just go home, right? We're going to cover this with telemedicine. You know, if we need you to come intubate somebody, you know, we'll call you back in, but otherwise just go home, take the night off. You can't do that. According to the rules, you still have to have somebody come back in, right, reassess the patient. No matter how simple the case is, they still have to come in, reassess, you know, and then decide to consult you. So it became a situation where it was like they were going to end up having to double pay. You know, on the one hand, you're paying to have the telemedicine person available. On the other hand, you're also still having to pay somebody else to be there in a kind of fully on-call situation. So that put a monkey wrench in what it was that we were trying to do. And we addressed that with CMS and it went kind of nowhere. So we ended up then being asked by communities, well, you know, you've kind of put together this telemedicine technology and all these other things to do ER medicine and inpatient medicine. You know, what about endocrinology or dermatology or something like that? And so we thought, well, you know, we could do that. I mean, it's not hard for us to do. And so that began the process of going out and pulling in these other specialty types and figuring out how they were going to be able to do their job, how to get the information to move around the right way. And that's really been the story of the company since then, is building out that network of providers, figuring out how to move data around, figuring out how to do the technology the best way possible for different kinds of specialties. And it's gone from there.
Interesting. Now, I know that I've heard some people say that they didn't think patients would like visiting with a physician via telehealth, but I've seen studies that say that actually in some situations, patients prefer telehealth medicine.
Our experience has been pretty uniformly positive. Now, you know, you can always say, well, maybe we have a selection bias, right? Because the patients that like us come back. I mean, that's fair, right? That's a possible criticism. But I will tell you that the feedback we've gotten from the sites that have and the communities that have chosen to use this has been pretty strongly positive. You know, every now and then we'll get somebody that says, hey, you know, I don't like this screen thing, but the vast majority of people that use it really do like it. And you know, for many of them, one of the things we found is that, you know, there've been studies done, not by us, by other entities, you know, that found even very elderly patients, right, who most people came in thinking, well, you know, they're going to hate this, you know, because they're older and they didn't grow up with technology. They won't. And in a lot of cases, they actually like it just fine. And I think it's because, you know, for many people, if you come to them and say, hey, okay, you know, here's the choice. Your choice is, hey, you need a rheumatologist. So your choice is to drive 3.5 hours one way to a really large city, right? Sit in the doctor's office for an hour and a half for a 10-minute follow-up visit, and then either have to drive back or spend the night there and then come back the next day. Or you can see somebody on a screen. A lot of people are going to see somebody on a screen. And then once they try that and they realize, wow, okay, you know, I can actually talk to this person. we can have a normal conversation. They can see me. They can examine me from head to toe. It starts to click. And then, you know, from there, for most people, it's a pretty positive experience.
Absolutely. Now, a lot of our listeners may know your organization as Vigilius, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
But you've recently changed your name to Free State Healthcare, correct?
That's right.
Any story that you want to share with us there, or is that enough said?
Well, the simplest thing was, you know, for any of your listeners, if you can spell Vigilius after I've just said it, then you win a prize. Okay. We ran into too many people that couldn't spell it or couldn't pronounce it when they saw the word. And so after running into this for a couple of years, we finally had some internal discussions, decided to change our name to something that we thought would be easier for people to handle.
All right. Free State Healthcare. That's pretty simple. I get it.
That's right.
So what about the technology? That's something I hear about too, the technology required to implement telemedicine.
Technology has improved dramatically over the past, I would say, 3 to 5 years. And a lot of that has been driven by the improvements in mobile technology, specifically cell phones, tablets, you know, laptops. The processors have gotten better. The cameras have gotten better. The screens have gotten better. So in a lot of cases, I would say in the majority of cases, by a wide margin, mobile technology is actually all you really need to be able to carry out really high quality telemedicine. One of the ironies, one of the things we found when we got into this initially, we were purely coming at it from the perspective of trying to supply clinical services to communities that needed them. But one of the issues that we ran into was the incredibly high cost of the technology that was available at that point in time. But when we really broke it down, using some of our own, you know, personal technical backgrounds, we kind of looked at what was out there, and it was just kind of shocking. The price was astounding relative to the function that was delivered, and also actually even to the specs. So as recently as a couple of years ago, you had devices that weren't really delivering, you know, a full HD image in the way that you would expect, you know, when you watch the football game or something along those lines. But, you know, that device would be sold for $25,000, $30,000, $60,000. So, you know, we initially started out just kind of cobbling together things that, you know, software and hardware and everything else that we thought would do the job. And it did. But over time, we developed a kind of a more streamlined set of hardware to do everything that we needed to do in one place. But, you know, the real message out of the whole thing is there's a lot of marketing going on around telemedicine technology at this point that you need this really expensive system and you need to pay a bunch of money per month for it or a bunch of money up front for it. And you need to have, you know, the special camera that enables all this Zoom. And that's just not true. That's just not true. And you know, your listeners certainly need to take home that point, that there's a lot of over-marketing going on about what tech you need. In fact, the iPhone in your pocket, your iPad, these kinds of things will, in many cases, supply you telemedicine at a better, from a technical spec perspective, in a better way than the stuff that you're going to go, you know, get a grant to buy.
Excellent. Thank you, Elisha. Right now, we're going to take a short break to hear a word from our sponsor. Then we're going to be right back to continue our conversation with today's guest, Dr. Elisha Yagmai, president of Free State Healthcare. Free State Healthcare, formerly known as Vigilius Telehealth, started as a group of doctors trying to improve access to primary care in rural Kansas using telemedicine. Over time, Free State Healthcare created 32 access points to over 20 specialists across Kansas, Nebraska, and New Mexico. To serve its clinical mission, Free State also developed proprietary software and hardware to specifically meet the needs of the underserved rural communities with few financial resources, providing high quality without the usual high price. Free State Healthcare continues to be committed to its mission to improve access to telemedicine while driving down the cost. If you'd like more information about Free State Healthcare or what Free State Healthcare might be able to do for your facility, you can give them a call at 800-924-8140. That's 800-924-8140. And make sure you tell them that you heard about them on Rural Health Leadership Radio. We're having a very interesting conversation today with Dr. Elisha Yagmai, the president of Free State Healthcare. He set out to save the world, and now he's saving rural America through telemedicine. Thank you again for joining us today. Now, right before the break, Elisha, we were talking about the technology required to implement telemedicine. What about the skill set of the IT people in the rural setting that are required for this?
You know, we've encountered a pretty wide variation. We have communities where, you know, the folks were really technophobic. You know, maybe the staff didn't even, you know, one place, I think the staff didn't even have a personal email address that they used outside of work. So we've gone all the way from there up to people that are very skilled, you know, and they've got a lot of IT knowledge and experience. What I would say is that the use of kind of mass technology, so, you know, cell phones, tablets, things like that, it's just spreading through society so quickly that we've in general had very little trouble getting people trained to use this kind of tech. And I don't think any, you know, back in the day, you know, you needed to maybe know a lot about it and understand, you know, how these networks went together. It was, you know, kind of a whole bunch of mumbo jumbo that went on in the background. These days, if you can figure out how to put together a wireless network, get a device on a wireless network, and, you know, and you can figure out how to use a smartphone or a tablet, you know, which is, you know, push a few buttons on a screen. If you can do that kind of stuff, you can summon enough expertise to use telemedicine equipment in most cases. And I would say here again, if it's not that easy to do, that's probably equipment that is outdated, being marketed to you as some kind of world beater, when in fact it's a dinosaur.
Interesting. Let's talk about money a little bit. What about the cost of implementing a telemedicine program? Isn't it expensive?
It used to be, and it's still, I think, unfortunately, felt to be in many places. So we've seen more than one community that felt that the only way to launch telemedicine was to get a grant from the USDA or some other entity and, you know, raise, you know, tens of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars to pay for, again, very well marketed equipment. In our experience, you know, a couple thousand bucks is often enough. I mean, really? You know, there's a few devices that you need. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, to get launched, a few simple devices will do the job very, very adequately. It will do the job as well as or better than many of those tens of thousands of dollars devices. And that's just not just me talking. I mean, you can pull their technical specs and compare them and you'll see for yourself, you know, wow, my iPhone is more powerful than that $30,000 telemedicine card they're trying to sell me, right? So if my iPhone is more powerful, you know, why am I spending the $30,000 on a cart? I should figure out something to do with my iPhone or my iPad or something like that instead. So those are the, you know, that's the level of device in many cases that you actually need to do telemedicine. Now there's, you know, you can talk about, well, getting it on a bigger screen or getting the sound louder. There are ways to do those things that, again, you know, those things will cost you tens of dollars or hundreds of dollars to do, not tens of thousands of dollars by any means. Certainly not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
That's really surprising. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that information. That's priceless right there. Continuing to ask you about money, what about reimbursement?
Reimbursement has been all over the map, both as an expression and literally. It varies a lot. So here's what I can tell you that's a definite. So Medicare pays for a lot of different kinds of telemedicine visits. So they will pay for outpatient kind of clinic style visits from most specialties. They will also pay for a fair amount of inpatient care. Now here again, Medicare does not allow the telemedicine physician to be the admitting physician, but it does allow them to be the consulting physician. Okay. So in other words, if you're a small hospital and maybe you have a physician's assistant working for you, case comes in, looks like, wow, this patient is very ill. This is a little bit beyond my level of comfort. You can consult a telemedicine physician. They could see the patient. And if it's a Medicare patient, Medicare will reimburse them for that work. In general, with very few exceptions, Medicaid will also pay for a lot of the same kind of stuff that Medicare will pay for. Obviously, you have to check with your specific state to see what their particular regulations are. But generally speaking, that is true. Where you get into a lot more variability are the private payers. And it can range anywhere from private payers that are pretty open to this and are willing to reimburse for it and work with providers on it, to others that are doing their best to ignore it or, you know, kind of pretend it's not going on, not reimburse for it at all. And we ourselves have had the range of experiences from you know, a relatively, you know, cooperative situation to payers that, you know, try their best to not pay us as much as they possibly can for anything that we do. And that, unfortunately, I wish I could sort of give you a state-by-state breakdown, but from our experience, at least, it really varies a lot from state to state. Okay. Mm-hmm. The other kind of thing to watch on that is that our initial impulse was, hey, you know, there are states in the United States, for example, that have payer parity laws, right? Which, where the state legislature has passed a rule saying, we require that any insurer in this state reimbursed for telemedicine at the same level as they would if it was an in-person visit. So in other words, if I get $100 to see the patient in person and instead I see them via telemedicine, I should get the same $100. In our experience, what we found was going into some states that had those rules, the loophole was, yes, we would reimburse at 100% if we had anybody that was actually doing telemedicine. And so if you kind of come in and say, hey, you know, I would like to do telemedicine, then you find out that, well, you know, we kind of don't want you in. So officially we will reimburse for telemedicine and we'll do it, you know, one-to-one relative to an in-office visit. But we just won't allow anyone onto our roles, onto our, you know, provider network that wants to work mainly through telemedicine. And that's the way to allow it without actually allowing it. So kind of the public gets one message. And in private, you get a very different kind of activity.
So what's been the most rewarding thing that's come out of your implementation of telemedicine?
I think it's seeing people that could not get care. Seeing people that I think to a degree have been forgotten by the healthcare system, watching them get access to care. So like there's, I'll give you an example. Like we had a patient that we were consulted on that was actually in the hospital. And this patient had been admitted. She suffered from rheumatoid arthritis, which is very severe disease. And yet there are a lot of very good treatments for it. Well, this lady, told us that she had been diagnosed, many years before, but over time, her economic situation had gotten worse. She wasn't able to make it to her follow-up visits. And so for the last 10 plus years, she had been self-managing her own rheumatoid arthritis. And to put it mildly, it wasn't going well. This is part of why she was in the hospital, actually, was because of some of the things that she'd been trying to do, self-managing her disease. And there was really no chance that person was going to get the same level of care because she wasn't able to travel the hours to a city, to get those kinds of things done. So, what we would have ended up doing with her is, likely her life would have been shorter. She might have died as a result of what was going on then, if not some other thing that would have come up later. There were long-term side effects from the medication she was trying to take. All these kinds of things where this was a simple, in a sense, right? This was a simple thing to fix, but due to the logistics, the lack of access, this person was not getting care. Another example I can give you was a gentleman that I was exposed to, who had really severe diabetes and, it was not well controlled. His primary care doctor had tried everything at their disposal to try to get it under control, wasn't working. This gentleman had really severe complications of his diabetes. He also, again, right, had a problem getting back and forth from his small town into a city to try to be seen by somebody. And we were able to go into that environment. Get him access to the physicians that he needed, and make an impact in his life. Mm-hmm. So we've seen, those are a couple of kind of easy stories that come to mind, but lots and lots of things like this,
sure,
where we're able to provide access to people that previously had been denied access by virtue of their zip code. I mean, that's the simplest way to describe it. We just say, unfortunately for you, you live in rural wherever, so you don't get to have this thing that everybody in a city would just get. Pure, with no questions asked, this would be the standard of care in the city. But because you live in a rural area, for some reason, you're not allowed to have that same service that other people would get. We're trying. We're doing what we can.
So what advice would you give to a rural health leader who's exploring telemedicine?
I think, maybe first point would be don't think in terms of limitations. The wrong question to ask is sort of, well, what things can telemedicine do? And the reality is telemedicine can do a lot of things at this point. There are many, many services that we can provide to people in rural areas via telemedicine that are just, it's almost unimaginable, actually, how much you can actually do with this modality if you combine the right peripherals, the right data collection, some of these other aspects of care. You can provide a lot of care at a very high level to people that you might not even be able to imagine. Second thing I think is to just be aware that there is a lot of marketing going on, particularly in the area of telemedicine equipment and telemedicine technology, where people are going around and trying to make this seem like a huge mountain that you have to climb. It's very difficult to do. It's very complicated. You need lots of help doing it. You probably need a grant to get it going. None of this is true. My suggestion would be sit down, with your community, with the providers in your community, figure out what services it is that you need to get, and then look at much more low cost, kind of common sense type solutions to the technology issue, and put most of the focus, take the focus off of the tech, because frankly, the price of the tech at this point should be the least of your worries, and put the focus on the service. What services do we need? How can we make life better here for patients? How can we make it better for providers? What kind of services would we love to be able to offer to patients in our community? And then focus on finding people that want to provide that service to you. And don't be put off by fears about tech, you know, being uncertain about what to do. There are lots and lots of resources out there that I think help smooth those things out. So, you know, mainly just don't be intimidated by it. If you can understand how to use your smartphone, you can understand how to implement telemedicine technology in your community.
Well, you've given us a lot of great information here, and I have a feeling that we've only scratched the surface of your knowledge on this topic. Would you welcome phone calls or emails from our listening audience to discuss?
Absolutely.
Can you give us your contact information or the best way someone should reach out to you?
Yeah, sure thing. Our phone number is 800-924-8140. I can be reached at extension 700 if anyone is interested in doing that. You can also email us at info, at freestatehealthcare.com. That's freestatehealthcare, freestatehealthcare.com, info@freestatehealthcare.com. Any of those ways, we'd be happy to talk to you and supply more detail.
Excellent. You know, we have covered a lot of ground here today. If our listening audience only take away one thing from the conversation today, what should that be?
Right now, using technology available currently in 2017, for a cost that would be that is surprisingly low, you should be able to supply to your community the intellectual resources of a tertiary referral center. That is something that can be done today. So you can change your whole mentality from saying, well, I'm a small outpost somewhere and I don't have access to all the providers and the expertise. You can change all those things and you can bring those intellectual resources into your community, and it does not have to break your bank.
Dr. Elisha Yagmai, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. Thank you for sharing your thoughts, your observations and experiences in rural health and telemedicine, and thanks for sharing those stories that you've experienced. And I want to thank all of you out there for listening today. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, whatever your favorite podcast app might be, and subscribe to Rural Health Leadership Radio. And if you'd like to leave a rating or review in iTunes, especially a 5-star rating, you can go to our website, www.rhlradio.com, and click on the iTunes link. And to continue the conversation of leadership in rural health, you can also join our LinkedIn group, Rural Health Leadership Radio. Until next week, let's keep working to improve healthcare in rural America.
If you would like to connect with today's guest, please send an email with your contact information to bill@billoxier.com. If you would like to be a guest or suggest someone else as a guest, have a question you would like to ask, or simply want to contact Rural Health Leadership Radio, please use that same email address, bill@billoxier.com. That's bill@billoxier.com. You can also visit our website at www.rhlradio.com.
We'd ask that you please support our sponsor, the Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health. The Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health's mission is to improve rural health one leader at a time.